주장야 찬대
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we can have a little discussion and thoughts from the devotees if they have anything. But first I'd like to say something about the song we just sang and review a little bit of the last few days. So this is a song, another song from Kalyana Kalpataru. We also sang from Kalyana Kalpataru yesterday. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that Chaitanya Chandera Lila Samudra Par Bhujite Shakti Nahi Ekatasar. Bhujite Shakti Nahi. No one has the ability, the potency to understand about the ocean, which this ocean has no shore of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. He says, indeed, this is the essence of this Kalyana Kalpataru. He says that Shashir Agamya Tattva Shri Krishna Amar. He says, Shri Krishna Amar, my Krishna. He says, my Krishna, he's my Krishna, but aside from that, he's also the absolute truth. Shashir Agamya Tattva. This is a fact. Tanya Lila Anta Bhuji Sakati Kanhar. Even the Shastras, they don't have the potency to be able to understand him, approach him. So he's unattainable by them. So who has the power to understand the limit of his pastimes? Tabi murka jana keno sastra vicharya. Gora lila nahi mane anta napaye. This is why these foolish people, tabi murka jana, these foolish people, why are they even studying the shastra? Why are they bothering? Gora lila nahi mane anta napaye. You won't understand Mahaprabhu's pastimes in this way. Roy Ramananda told Mahaprabhu so many things in the 8th chapter of Madhyalila Chaitanya Charitamrita, that chapter which is known as Ramananda Samvad. And Mahaprabhu rejected everything. He even surrendered to Krishna. He said, this is also external. All these things. And finally, the first verse that Roy Ramananda said, which Mahaprabhu accepted, was, Gyane prayasamudha pasyana manta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam Stani stita shutigatam danuvan manovir ye prayaso ajita jito pasitaistri lokyam. He says that one should give up gyan prayas, useless cultivation of gyan. From the context of this verse, where it's appearing in Madhyalila chapter 8, we can understand that he's not talking about nirvisesa gyan, but he's talking about bhakti gyan. If you look at the place where it's at, he's speaking about bhakti before that and then surrender to Krishna. But he says, Gyane prayasam. This is not going to help you. Give this thing up. Gyane prayasam udapashanamanta eva. This thing won't help, but jivanti san mukaritam bhavadiyavartam. You should hear from those persons that sat mukaritam, the lotus mouth of those persons who are speaking about Lord Krishna's pastimes, those sat janas. And their katha is our life. Tavakatam mitam tapta jivanam. And he says that don't worry, don't try, don't bother about any external things. Stani stita shruti gatam. You just go on hearing shruti gatam. And stani stitam. If you're grihastha, that's fine. If you're sannyasi, that's fine. If you're a brahmachari, that's fine. But you should become like a madman, thinking your head is on fire. I just want to hear. I want to hear this Hari Katha about Krishna. Stani Sita Shuti Gatam Dhanavan Manopya. Ye prayaso jita jito paisitaistri lokam. And if you do this, then the Mayavadis, they want to become one with Krishna. But Lord Brahma spoke this verse in 10th canto. He says you can become greater than Krishna. You can defeat Krishna. Because Krishna becomes defeated by such a person who stays in one place hearing from his guru. So Bhaktivinoda is saying here that why are they even bothering studying the Shastra? You're not going to understand Gaura Lila in this way. Anantara anta ache kona Shastra gai Shastra dina Krishna ihasuni hasi pai. What Shastra can describe something which is unlimited? He says, when I hear Suni, Shastra Dina Krishna Iha, that Krishna is subordinate to the Shastra. Krishna has to go along with the Shastra. You know, the Shastra says like this, so Krishna has to follow that. Then Hasi Pai. I laugh. Some smile comes to my face and I laugh. Krishna Hoi Bena Gora Icha Hoila Tanra Sava Kunta Nava Dvipe Hoila Avatara. Krishna, he decided that he wanted to come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a fair complexion. So when he came, he brought the spiritual world with him and he descended in Navadvip. Jakuna asena Krishna jiva udharite sange sabha sahachar ase ase prativite. When Mahaprabhu decided to come to deliver the fallen souls, he also brought along with him all of his associates. Gora avatari tanashi jai bijai Navadvipa shatru bhave hoila udoy. So when he came, the Navadvip, Jai and Bijai, his gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, they also came and they became his enemies. Purbe purbe avatari asurara chilo sastre bole pandita hoyo janamilo. He says again and again, purbe purbe, in the past, again and again. Previously, they appeared, these two demons. And now, Sastra Bole Pandita Hoila Janamila, they've taken birth as pandits, very learned in the Shastra. Smriti Taka Tarka Shastra Bole Bhaya Prakashiya Gora Chandra Saharana Koila Matiya. And they're coming, and they're speaking all these different things from the Shastras, and the Smriti and the Tarka Shastras. And they've manifested themselves as Krishna, as Mahaprabhu's enemies. In this way, they're fighting with him. Ata eva naba dvipa basi jata jan. Sri Chaitanya lila pushti kori anukan. Anukan means moment after moment. Moment after moment, everyone. Ata eva naba dvipa basi jata jan. All the residents of naba dvipa. Sri Chaitanya lila pushti kori. Pushti means to nourish. All the residents of naba dvipa, they nourished Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Ekona je brahma kule chaitanyara ari take jani chaitanyara lila pushtikari. Ari means enemy. He says that ekona te brahma kule chaitanya ari take jani. Jani, I know that these so-called enemies of the Lord that are born in this brahma kule, these Brahmin families, what did they do? Chaitanya lila pushtikari. They made Mahaprabhu's pastimes even sweeter. They nourished it. They helped the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Anuchaya Satru Mitra Jata Sakalera Sri Charani Hoi Lama Anata. Therefore, he says that I offer my obeisances to all those persons, the followers of Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Anuchar, as well as the Satru Mitra Jata, the Satru, the enemies of Mahaprabhu, and the friends, the Mitra of Mahaprabhu. And I pray to them, Tomara Koroho Kripa Eda Sera Prati Chaitanya Sudhrida Koro Binodhira Mati. That you please bless me. You please give me devotion to Mahaprabhu. So this is a very wonderful prayer. Yesterday we were discussing something about two very important principles, Drashta and Drishta. The seer and the seen. This is a very, very important principle if we talk about respect. Because respect is based upon our vision. It's based upon, as we described in the first day or so, is based upon our identity of ourself and what identity we ascribe to others. If we hang a gross upadi on them, that they're just simply meant there for my personal enjoyment, as the asuras, the demoniac people do, Whereas in Vedic culture, we hang another type of upadhi, which is a more progressive upadhi on them. And we assign them a designation saying that they're a Brahman, they're a Kshatriya or Vaishya, they're a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. And we identify them in one of those ways. This is more progressive because the values in the Vanashram system are more conducive for liberation and they're more elevating. Those values, again, are exhibited by knowledge, is held by the Brahmins, and renunciation is held by the Sannyasis, the heads of the Vana and the Ashrams, respectively. So, higher than that, as we spoke 2 days ago, the highest of the Varnas is the Brahmins by their activity. And we spoke something about how we should offer respect to the Brahmins, even those Kula Brahmins, those Brahma Bandhus. And we cited the example of Draupadi and how she begged for the life of Ashwatthama. She said, "You forgive Ashwatthama," even though he'd killed her sleeping sons. She had some culture. She wanted to offer respect to him, even though he wasn't a proper Brahmin. But because he looked like a Brahmin, she was offering respect to him. So again, there's two considerations that we're dealing with always. This is an important thing. There's a social, external consideration, and there's an internal, spiritual consideration. And both of these things are very valid. If we only consider the spiritual consideration, and I don't know who is really on that platform to really do that, that they don't see anything in the material part of it. But if we only consider the spiritual vision, then how will the society go on? Because the general people aren't going to be on that platform. If they were, there wouldn't be any society because we wouldn't be here. We'd all be in the spiritual world. But because we're not in the spiritual world, because we have some material consciousness, this external vision also has to be there. And a wise person doesn't disturb those persons who are on a lower platform. So we should understand the difference between drashta and drishta, the seer and the seen. These are very, very important principles. Most of our problems in our spiritual life, or you could say in one sense all the problems in our spiritual life, are based upon these two principles. That we think we're the seer, when actually we should be the seen. Inherent in this concept is a principle which is very important in Vedic culture, and when to speak in Vaishnava culture, is that we should behave according to our adhikar, according to our position. And we spoke something about that the last few days, that if we act according to our adhikar, then everything is very nice. In Vedic culture, everyone has a particular position. They understand their position, they accept their position, and they act within their position, and they don't try to perform other people's work. Krishna describes this twice in the Gita, in different verses. So this is a very important principle. If we do that thing, then we can be peaceful. But if we're always thinking about, oh my God, what are the managers of ISKCON doing? Why are they allowing this thing? Why are they allowing that thing? And your service is just to wash dishes or to dig ditches. You're going to always be in anxiety. And how will you chant Hare Krishna? And really, ultimately, what's important? The management or you're chanting Hare Krishna? Our chanting Hare Krishna is what's really important. Prabhupada, he said on one occasion, our favorite quote, Prabhupada told the GBC, addressed the GBC body, and he said, this chanting should go on. Instead of meetings, resolutions, dissolutions, revolutions, and no solutions, there should be chanting. So this is the Hare Krishna movement. The whole purpose of our meetings, resolutions, dissolutions, and revolutions, and solutions, is to get everyone to chant Hare Krishna. But if we're not doing that thing, then no matter how fancy our resolutions and dissolutions and meetings and things are, they have no meaning, they serve no purpose. And on the other hand, they may be very simple, they may be very crude, our meetings and our management. But if the purpose being served is to chant Hare Krishna, then everyone will be filled with happiness. And I think sometimes when I hear from older devotees talking about the good old days, I think perhaps this has something to do with that. That in those days when you read about the devotees, they didn't know which hand to eat with practically. And Naranjava, who told me once that he was at a Sunday feast program in New York, and he saw Rabindra Saruprabhu was speaking to some visiting professor. And he noticed that professor was standing there with some prasadam in his hands eating. He dropped some of the prasadam on the ground.
And Narunchi was a new devotee. And everybody had told him that prasadam shouldn't be wasted. It was very sacred. So he dropped down on the ground and started picking up that prasadam at the feet of that professor and eating it like this. Poor Ravindra Sarup was kind of kicking him. Hey, get out of here. What are you doing? So the devotees in those days, they didn't really know. But it didn't matter because their motivation was important. And therefore, we should be anusa, not anukar. We should be following the essence. We should be saragrahi Vaishnavas, not baravahi. Not just carrying a heavy load of all these rules and regulations and vanashram, this thing and that thing. We should understand the essence of things. If we understand the essence of things, and what is the essence for the Gaudiya Vaishnava? It's the holy name. Tanadapi sunichina, toro eva sahisrina, amanina manadina, kirtaniya sadahari. The holy name chanted in this way, in a mood of great humility, offering all respect to others. If we do that, then everything is very, very good. We should offer respect to our elders. If you don't see that anyone is older than you, if you don't see there's any seniors to you, you have a very sad life. Really, I feel very sorry for such a person. Such a person is really penniless. They really don't have any wealth. But that person who sees everybody as a superior and sees that everybody can give me some instructions, that person's a very, very wealthy person. He's a very, very fortunate person. Prabhupada writes in his purport in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 4, he says, it is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. We should offer all respect to our superiors, no matter what they may look like. And we shouldn't consider ourselves to be the seer. And one good example in this regard are the demons in Gaura Lila. So Bhaktivinoda, what he's saying, that he's offering prayers to these persons. Sometimes in our society, devotees, they think that, oh, now I've been a devotee for so many years. I know very well about ISKCON and Krishna consciousness. I'm an expert devotee. I'm a senior person. I know so many things. And I can't be fooled anymore. I'm very wise. So such a person, if we were to ask them, what would you think if I told you about a leader, a manager in our society who was stealing money? What would they think about such a person? Would he be a good person, Pradosh? Would you accept them? Would you offer respect to them? No. He's very harsh. They're stealing money. What kind of bogus person is that? And then what if I told you they were having illicit relationships with other men's wives? Would you want to offer respect to them? Would we do that? Could we do that thing? I think it would be very difficult for most people. And then what if I told you, not only were they doing that, but they were very violent, and they'd hurt devotees. Not only that, they were murdering Vaishnavas, and they were breaking temples and breaking deities, and killing cows, killing Brahmins. Would you think they were a very respectable person? Nope. Okay, so it's unanimous, right? But then what if I told you that what they were doing, all those activities, was their service to the Lord, and that they were an eternal associate of the Lord? such as Jai or Bijai, who've come to Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and Sishupal and Dantavakra, and they're doing so many demoniac things, as Ravan and Kumbhakarna. So therefore Jesus says in the Bible, which we consider to be, what Prabhupada says what about it, he says it's a Upadharma Shastra. We don't consider it a very high Shastra, but even in the Bible, Jesus says that we hate the sin and not the sinner. So even those persons, we make fun of the Christians, we think that's a very low thing, but even they have this conception that we should distinguish. Now, I hope everybody understands that this doesn't mean that the behavior of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha is saintly, is desirable, or is in any way, shape, or form allowable or agreeable to us. We hate their behavior. But we don't consider ourselves to be the seer. And a prime example of this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song here in Kalyana Kalpataru, where he's praying to the so-called demons in Gaura Lila and asking them to bless him. So many things we can learn from his song, one of which is that Bhaktivinoda, he's not considering himself to be the seer. Implicit in this song is the conception that I don't know who's who and what's what. Sometimes we may criticize Ramachandra Puri. Many devotees say bad things about Ramachandra Puri. But do you know, according to Kavi Karnapur and his Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, Ramachandra Puri is Jatila. Krishna's eternal associate in the spiritual world is living in Yavat. And she's always causing trouble for the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but that so-called trouble enhances their pastimes. Just as the so-called demons in Gaura Lila also enhance the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. So we don't know. Maybe those persons are there because the Lord wants them to be there. Sometimes we question, how is it in our society this person became a president? There's one person we know, probably the older devotees here, they may know something, Maharaj will know. There's one temple president in Detroit, famous example we've heard many times, who was not chanting his rounds, wasn't, as far as I've heard, wasn't following all the regulated principles, but he was a very expert manager. But all the devotees were complaining about him. And Prabhupada came and they said, Prabhupada, he should be kicked out. Prabhupada said, no, he's doing very good work. And the Prabhupada, this and that, no, you let him stay. And then without Prabhupada's permission, all the devotees got together and they kicked him out. And then Prabhupada came and they said, why did you kick him out? And Prabhupada brought him back. So we don't understand the mind of a Vaishnava. We don't understand the mind of Krishna. Vaishnava, Chinite Nayadeva Rishakati. We were also discussing this point yesterday. We can't understand the mind of a Vaishnava, and it's not our business to do so. It's not our business to one-up Srila Prabhupada or Acharya. It's not our business to one-up Krishna. Our business is to render the service that's been given to us by Guru and Krishna. In the Vanashram system, everyone has a place, and everyone's peaceful in that place, and they're offered respect according to that position. If someone is a Sudra, in Ramayana there's a story, which we'll tell this story, but everyone will become very bewildered initially. It's a very difficult story to understand. In Ayodhya, it's described that some drought came. Is that right? Some drought? I mean, maybe some drought, but one Brahmin's son died. And he came to Lord Ramachandra. He said, hey, what's going on? This is really bad. No child is supposed to die before the father. You're the king. You're responsible for this thing. Just a similar thing happened also in Krishna Lila. One Brahmin in Dwarka was complaining to Krishna. So Lord Ramachandra was very bewildered. He said, well, I've been doing everything right. Everything's going okay in my kingdom. So he called for all of his advisors, all the Rishi Ganas, and asked them, what's going on? So they're Trikala Gyar. Of course, Saul also is Lord Ramachandra, but he's doing his Naralila, his human-like pastimes. So he's acting like he's Mugdha, like he's bewildered. So he's asking their opinion. And with their Trikala Gyar Shakti, they looked and they said, oh, there's one Sudra who's doing austerities. And because of that, this thing has happened, and there's some inauspiciousness in your kingdom. Lord Ram said, where is he? Please tell me. Oh, he's in such and such place. So Lord Ram went there. And he found there was one Sudra, one man, hanging from a tree by his feet, hanging upside down. And Lord Ram went up to him and said, oh, my dear Sadhu, very nice to see you. He said, I'm surprised to see you out here. Could you please tell me, what is your name? What caste are you from? What kind of austerities are you doing? What is the purpose of that? So that man, he said, my name is such and such, and I'm a Sudra, and he got nothing more from his mouth, and his head was cut off by Lord Ramachandra. Immediately killed him because he was doing a great offense. What was that great offense? He was doing austerities, and that's not the work for the Sudras. Now when we hear this, Kalo Sudra Sambhava, we're all Sudras, we become very depressed. This is a very difficult thing to understand. First of all, this isn't Treta Yuga. This is not in this age. But actually the principle is a Vedic principle. Lord Ramachandra was correct. He's Maryada Purushottam. He's a very embodiment of Veda Maryada, of proper etiquette, proper behavior. Don't think that he was wrong. Don't think you should go and preach to Lord Ramachandra, hey, why did you do that thing? That's bogus. He's correct. He's the embodiment of religion. Whatever he does is religion. So everyone should act according to their position. Now in Kali Yuga, everyone can can chant Krishna Nam, everyone can do austerities because Kalo Sudra Sambhava, everybody in Kali Yuga is a Sudra. And because of that, it's a little difficult for us to understand this principle from a previous age. But the principle is, the underlying principle is, that everyone should act according to their varna and their ashram. And people are peaceful in that. And they're respected by that. And if you act outside of your varna and ashram, even if you do something which seems to be an exalted thing, you're leaving home and doing austerities for spiritual life, you're considered to be a rascal number one, and you should be killed. Lord Ramachandra cut his head off for that. So in this age of Kali, we take shelter of Guru. And Guru gives us instruction. I don't think I'm going to try to condense things more today. I was very guilty the last few days. So we were going to speak more about this principle of service to Guru, which is a very, very, very important principle. But suffice to say that Kaviraj Goswami says that the service to Guru, this is the essence of spiritual life. And those persons who are not serving the instructions of Guru, they're asar. They don't know what to do. What should we do and what should we not do? It's nice that you've been initiated. Yesterday we were speaking something about what it means to be initiated and who's really initiated. How that person is completely surrendered, no longer has any material desires. They have a spiritual body and Krishna has accepted them as good as himself. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has described that thing. So, being initiated means that we should accept the instruction of Guru. It's not, why do we become initiated? For some people, being initiated is the end. They think, oh, this is very bad, you know. I joined the Hare Krishna movement now, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 2 years ago, and I haven't gotten initiated, and everybody still calls me Bhakta Bob. And there's no respect in that, you know. Bhaktine Antoinette. There's no respect in that. Nobody gives a fig about that, right? It's not good. So I should take initiation. If I take initiation, everybody will be very impressed and think, oh, you're a sadhu. You're very, very advanced. And then if I take second initiation, then I can impress everybody with my panditya and how I'm a Brahmin and I know how to do puja and this and that and the other. That's not why we're coming to this place. Our revered spiritual master, he used to say that when you came here, you were very nice. When you came here, you wanted Krishna. He said, but after some years, you forgot why you came. And now you're just trying to become a temple president, a GBC, a guru, this thing, that thing. And everything is spoiled by that. We should remember, we should be very, very simple and remember why we've come here. We've come here to get Krishna. And all these other external things which may come on the way, getting married, or being a temple president, being a leader, this thing or that thing, those things are all external, and that's not the purpose for it coming. One devotee a few years ago, they told me, they said, Madhavananda, you have to think about your career in Krishna consciousness. I'm the wrong person for someone to say that to. I said, yes, I am thinking about it. That's why I stay away from management and all these kinds of things. But we should try and remember why we've come here. Prabhuji asked such a nice question yesterday. Why is it that we were not able to be respectful to people who are very close to us, our family members, our wife, our husband? And part of the reason is because of this, that we've forgotten who they are. We've forgotten why we married that person. We've forgotten our responsibility of being a parent to them. And they're dependent upon us. We've forgotten our responsibility of being a child to our parents and being respectful to them. We should always keep that thing in mind. So these two principles are very, very important. Drishta and drishta. And we should offer respect to our seniors. Talk about the note in another place in Chaitanya Sikshamrita, in the second shower, he describes the importance of rendering service. And again, this is a little bit of a review. We spoke about this principle in the second day, I think, about how we should cultivate humility. And that humility comes from rendering service to superior persons. And Thakur Bhaktivinoda elaborates more on that. He says there's three types of service to elders. Protection of one's parents, protection of teachers, and protection of other elders. This is how we serve, this is how we respect our senior persons, by protecting them. And in particular, we should protect our parents, our teachers, and the elders. He says one must follow the instruction of the parents and serve them as much as possible. as much as possible. Sometimes when we join the Krishna conscious movement, I remember my own case. So I joined, they shaved my head, and 2 days later I was on the telephone to my mother. Hey mom, just repeat after me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It didn't go over very big. She started crying, and my father's on the phone. You've joined a cult. This is very, very bad. And we're trying. We didn't speak to our parents for several years after that, after we joined. But then after we calmed down a little bit, we took a few deep breaths, and we realized actually we're not quite liberated souls yet. We're not that advanced. And that we should be a little respectful to our parents. And we found that actually there's many different ways that we can serve them, our parents. One way is we can just be respectful to them. We can be affectionate to them. We can phone them. We can send them an email. They won't kill you. Once a week or once a month, whatever. And they feel some happiness from that. And that's actually good for our bhakti. There's three types of persons we should mention in this world. Swanishita, the Parinishita, and the Nirapeksha. And this is in terms of Vedic culture. The Swanishita sadhak, he has strong faith that I have to do vanashram. You'll see such a person, if he's a Brahmin, when he's taking prasadam, he does achaman before he takes prasad. And then he sprinkles the water around his plate and he chants, he offers oblations of the different eras in the body and so many different mantras and things. And he thinks, I have to do this thing. And before I go traveling somewhere, I have to look at the Punji. I have to look and see where Saturn is and where Rahu is and see if it's an auspicious titi for me to travel on or not. And they think they have to do this. These things are enjoined in the Shastras. And so this Swanishita, they have strong faith. I have to do this thing. If I don't do this thing, some bad thing is going to happen to me. So a devotee, someone who's coming to Krishna consciousness, they should be Parinishita. Their nishta, their conviction is higher than that Swanishita person. And they understand that Krishna consciousness is everything. And that if we simply serve Krishna, everyone else will be satisfied. Yata toro mulana sechanena chaptanti tat skandabhujo pasakaha. If you pour water on the root of a tree, all the branches are satisfied. And similarly, if we please Krishna, everything else is satisfied. And there's no debt for such a person. Devarsi bhutaptaninam pritrinam. You have no debt to the devatas, to the pitris, to the fellow men or anything. All those debts, all that rina, has gone away because you're rendering service to Krishna. They have faith like that, but they also have some material desires. This is Parinishita. So he thinks, I have to act according to this way. I should act according to this way because it's better for me. It's better for me if I marry and if I act as a grihastha devotee. It's better for me if I act according to my nature like this. I know it's not the absolute thing. I know it's not necessary, but it will help me in my bhajan. That's Parinishita. And Nirapeksha is that person who doesn't care. He's beyond that. He's a topmost sadhak. He may do, he may not do. Srila Prabhupada entered Grihastha Ashram. Bhaktivinoda Thakur entered Grihastha Ashram. But they didn't have to enter Grihastha Ashram. And they were detached from that thing because they always knew that Krishna was the goal of life. So they may act according to Vanashram, they may not act according to Vanashram. They have no obligation to do that. So Bhaktivinoda says one must follow the instructions of parents and serve them as much as possible. A person should serve those who have protected him as a helpless child. He should also serve those who have given knowledge, especially those who have given spiritual knowledge and mantra. And he makes a distinction. Especially those. But that means that especially those means you should also be respectful to people who have given you mundane knowledge. Why not? Amani namanadena, we should be respectful to everyone. Those are considered superior. Who's a superior person? Who are bigger in body? You remember this next time you're walking down a dark street in Harlem and you see a big, big fellow coming out of the shadows. He's superior to you and you should be respectful to him. Someone who's bigger in body, greater in age, or more experienced in knowledge. One must respect and serve them all. One should not follow incorrect orders of a superior, but one should not show hostility towards him using disrespectful or harsh words. One should correct their improper behavior or instructions by using sweet words, humility, and gentle reasoning at the proper time. So culture means that you understand how to say this thing. What kind of sweet words to use? What kind of reasoning to use? And what is a proper time and a proper place? For example, a proper time and a proper place to correct a superior person is not in the question and answers time after they've just given Bhagavatam class. Sometimes devotees, they think like that, and they want to raise their hand, "You said this!" They want to start throwing arrows like that. A few issues back in our Krishna Katamrita Bindu magazine, we printed one verse, I don't remember, I don't have it in my notes, from Shiva Purana, which describes that someone who quarrels with a speaker of Krishna Katha, someone who's speaking Krishna Katha, Hari Katha, and someone quarrels with that person has to go to hell for quarreling with them. So think about that. Next time class is going on. So that's not a proper time or a proper place. And we should also understand our relationship with that person. It's one thing if the person who's giving class is a fairly new devotee and you're the temple president there and he says something. Still, proper etiquette actually is not to correct them in the class, depending on what they say. And we'll leave that up to the leaders to decide. But in general, because that person is representing Srila Vyasadeva, we don't want to create the atmosphere of a challenging spirit to people who are speaking the Bhagavatam. A better course is to correct that person privately in a gentle, affectionate way, and off to the side, not in front of everyone. And then maybe the next day you give class yourself and you say something in a nice way to rectify whatever that person said. It's not the end of the world if someone says something wrong in Bhagavatam class, by the way. The earth won't fall down, the earth won't fall open, the sky won't crash down. We should be able to tolerate that thing. We all have some imperfections. Manajit?
What's the question?
She's asking me to repeat this thing. Someone should correct a superior person using sweet words, humility, and gentle reasoning at the proper time. It's a very nice phrase, gentle reasoning. So that's enough of going back over things. Are there any comments or questions over the last few days? Pretty soon we're going to get onto this subject which we delayed yesterday. Do you want to say anything? So we were speaking about Vaishnavas, and we went so far as to cite this verse from Srila Rupa Goswami. Krishna iti yasya giri tvam manasadviyeta dikshashti cha pranatibhishcha bhajantamisham shushushraya bhajana vignamananyamanya indari shunya shilamitsita sankalabhya. Three different types of respect we should offer to Vaishnavas. And this is further described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. There's three different types of Vaishnavas. Acharyam eva haraye, pujam yashariyate, natat bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrite smitaha. Srila Prabhupada translates this verse. He says that a prakrita, or materialistic devotee, does not purposely study the Shastra. He doesn't take the time to sit down and study Shastra. And try to understand the actual standard of pure devotional service. Consequently, he does not show proper respect to advanced devotees. He may, however, follow the regulated principles learned from his spiritual master or from his family who worships a deity. He is to be considered on the material platform, although he is trying to advance in devotional service. Such a person is a bhakta praya, a neophyte devotee, or bhakta bas, for he is little enlightened by Vaishnava philosophy. That's Prabhupada's translation from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a different translation, 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. But this is a little more fluffed out, nice translation. The Madhyama Adhikari is described in 11th canto, chapter 2, text 46. Ishvare taradineshu baliseshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kipo peksha ya koroti samadhyamaha. The Madhyama Adhikari is someone who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the highest object of love, makes friends with the Lord's devotees, is merciful to the ignorant, and avoids those who are envious by nature. And the Uttama Adhikari is described in 11th Canto, Chapter 2, Text 45. Sarva Bhuteshu Ya Pashyad Bhagavad Bhavam Atmanaha Bhutani Bhagavat Yatmani Esha Bhagavatottama. A person advanced in devotional service sees within everything the soul of souls, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Consequently, he always sees Krishna everywhere and in everything. He is an Uttam Bhagavat, one of the topmost platform of devotional service. So Kanishta Adhikari, he has Komala Shraddha, Lokik Shraddha. His Komala Shraddha means weak. It's not very fixed. It's not Jitta Shraddha. It's Lokik Shraddha. He has faith in what everybody else has to say. If 100 people say something, he thinks, oh, it must be true. If everybody says this one person is a very advanced Mahabhagavat Vaishnava, then he thinks it must be so. He accepts like that. And his opinion is not based on Shastra. He doesn't have Shastriya Shraddha. He has Lokik Shraddha. The Madhyama Adhikari, he has four attitudes. Ishvare, toward the Lord, he has prem. He exhibits love toward the Lord. Tadadineshu, those persons who are Maitri, who are equal to him, he has some friendship. Baliseshu, innocent persons, he shows some mercy, some kripa towards. Dvisatsu, persons who are envious, he exhibits upeksha, he neglects them. It's described as two types of baliseshu, of ignorant persons. One ignorant person is not doing anything. He just sleeps underneath the tree. He takes prasadam all day. Jagadatma Prabhu, one devotee in Australia, told us about one new bhakta who was in their temple years before. And sometimes this devotee would disappear for 2, 3, 4, 5 days at a time. And then they would find him asleep somewhere. Once they couldn't find him for like 3 days or something, and he was looking for some clothes to wear in Sankirtan. They had a big box of old clothes. So he went over and opened up the box and started digging through it. And he found this person sleeping in the box. He'd been sleeping there for like 2 or 3 days. Straight. He was a heroin addict before he joined. Such a person, an innocent person, an ignorant person, but they're not doing anything bad. They're just sleeping. So you don't have to worry about them. Worse than that is a dvisatsu, is an envious person. And that envious person, upeksha, the Madhyama Adhikari, he neglects such a person. If we want to advance, if we want to ratchet up our Adhikar for bhakti, if we want to progress in our qualification for bhakti, we have to try to cultivate the qualities of the Madhyama Adhikari. We don't try to imitate or cultivate the qualities artificially of the Uttama Adhikari. As we described previously, I think maybe in the first day, for the Kanishtha Adhikari, he only sees the Uttama Adhikari as a real devotee. Because of the vision of the Uttama Adhikari, he sees Krishna in everyone, he's respectful to everyone, he sees everyone is more advanced than himself. And the Kanishtha says, yes, this is a sadhu. And this Madhyama Adhikari, what is this thing? He's yelling at people, get out from here, why are you stealing this money? Why should he be so angry? Don't be angry with people, you should just love everyone. And people, they say like that. But actually, that position of the Madhyama Adhikari is something that we should cultivate. It's a very, very important thing. So we have written on the board some extrapolation of these three types of devotees based on Bhakti Sandarbha. This is a very big subject. I don't want to get into this very much. We'll just touch on it very, very briefly. And the purpose is to just give us some understanding and some appreciation for the glories of the devotees. To get into this thing very elaborately is beyond me. And it's beyond my limits. And it's also a subject that can take a lot of discussion. Very big thing. So there's three types of devotees. There's three types of Kanishas, three types of Uttams, three types of Madhyams. There's a Kanishta. The Kanishta he has two things, Lajja and Ghrina. Shyness and aversion to taking remnants of the devotee's remnants. He's shy. When the devotees are going out for Nam Sankirtan, he doesn't want to go. Because he's afraid maybe some of his old friends will see him or something like that. He has some faith, and the chanting of Hare Krishna. But he's afraid to go out in public like that because someone may see him. And he has aversion to taking remnants of an advanced devotee. He thinks this is... I remember the first temple we started going to was a New Orleans temple in 1981, I think. And we used to stay after the Sunday feast program and have philosophical discussions, more like arguments with the devotees, and they would always defeat us. And they would bring us some Mahaprasadam every day from the Lord's offering just before he took rest. And one day this devotee came out and he gave us this big box of Mahaprasadam. And he was very, very enthusiastic. And he said, "This is very, very special. This has Krishna's saliva on it." He told us that thing. And I remember looking. We took each one of those sweets out of the box. And we were looking at him very carefully. We thought, my God, they have somebody drooling on these sweets behind the curtain. Because we were Kanishtha Kanishtha. We had some appreciation for chanting Hare Krishna. But we had some aversion to taking someone's remnants. We didn't understand exactly about prasadam, huh? So this is the nature of a Kanishtha Kanishtha. Then the Madhyam Kanishtha, he has Dhridhashraddha. His faith is more fixed. He has some understanding of Shastra. The Uttam Kanishtha, he's Nishtha. He's fixed. Nishtha to a Sakti. He's fixed in those things. The Madhyama Adhikari begins with Bhav Bhakti. These are very big subject matters. And there's different ways we can define these devotees. Again, we can understand these things in terms of a social understanding. There's two considerations, a social consideration and an internal consideration. We can understand if someone doesn't know any Shastra, maybe they're enthusiastic, that person is a Kanishtha Adhikari. By definition of Shastra, they're chanting Hare Krishna, but they don't know Shastra. But someone might say the same thing about Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He wasn't a Sanskrit expert in that, but he knew Shastra because he knew the essence of Shastra. So it's not just a question of offering respect to how many verses someone knows, but we should see the essence of things. But at the same time, some external respect can be there. We respect someone who knows more Shastra, because in our society, it's a very important thing. Shastra people, when we speak, we should speak on the basis of Shastra. Our Guru Maharaj used to say that if you cannot quote Shastra, don't tell them you're my disciple. He was very strong about that thing. And he said that a sadhu always quotes authority. And Prabhupada said like that many times. But at the same time, don't think that you can understand and judge someone just on this simple basis. Vamsidas Babaji, I don't think he was quoting a lot of Shastra. Neither was Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And not everyone may be doing that. But this is one sign of respect that we can give to someone. So the Madhyama Adhikari, he begins from the platform above. And this is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Chantir avyakta kaladvam viraktir manasunyata. Asa bandha samutkanta nama gane sadaruchi asaktistad gunakyane pritistad vasatistale ityadayo anubhava sure jata bhavan kure jane. When this bhavanukura, this seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna, fructifies, the following nine symptoms manifest. So this is fructification. It's planted in the stage of the Kanishtha. He has some faith in it. It may be weak, but then it's beginning to fructify and it blossoms. There's three stages to a seed. It's planted and it fructifies and it blossoms. So that planting stage is the Kanishtha Adhikari. That Madhyama stage is the blossom, that stage is beginning to fructify. And the flowering stage is the Uttama Adhikari. Nine symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted, detachment, absence of false prestige, hope, eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord, attachment to descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and affection for the places where the Lord resides, that is a temple or a holy place like Vrindavan. These are all called anubhav, subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. So there's three types of Kanishtha Madhyam. He has some Kasaya. Kasaya means some bodily conception still in him. But he has three qualities. Kshantir, he has forgiveness. This Kshantir is a very, very important quality, this quality of forgiveness. Chanakya Pandit, he describes, Santir tulayam tapo nasti na santosha param sukham na tishnaya parovyadir na cha dharmo dayapara. He says there's no greater austerity than being calm, being peaceful. That's the greatest austerity. There's no greater happiness, greater joy than self-satisfaction. There's no disease that's worse than greed. And there's no dharma which is greater than compassion. There's no dharma, no religiousness which is greater than compassion. He describes in another chapter, Kokilanam swaro rupam, strinam rupam pativratam, vidya rupam karupanam, shama rupam tapasvinam. A cuckoo bird has some beauty. But if you look at the cuckoo, it looks like a crow. You can tell a little bit by the tail. The cuckoo has a longer tail. But it's black, a very ugly looking bird, actually. But the cuckoo sings so beautifully. So the beauty of the cuckoo is in his voice. The beauty of a wife is in her chastity to her husband. Earning is a beauty, excuse me, learning is a beauty for an ugly person. He has no other beauty. But if a person is learned, then they're also considered to be beautiful, even though they may be very ugly. And forgiveness is a beauty of the sadhus. In the Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 15, text 39, Jamadagni, he tells Parshuram, Vayam hi brahmanastha ta kshamayarhanatam gata eya loka guru deva parameshtyam agatpadam. He says, my dear son, we're Brahmins. And we become worshipful for people in general. Why? Because of one quality, the quality of forgiveness. It's because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the supreme guru of this universe, has achieved his post. And then he goes on to tell him, Shamaya rochate lakshmir brahmi sori yata prabha kshaminam masubhaga vams tushyate hara ishvaraha. The duty of a Brahman is to cultivate the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. So this Krishna conscious movement, the purpose of this Krishna conscious movement is to make Vaishnavas, to make Brahmins. Once in Hawaii, one devotee came to Srila Prabhupada, famous story, and said, oh Prabhupada, you know, I've thought about my nature and I recognize that I'm a Kshatriya. And you please give me some instructions. And Prabhupada said, we have no place for you. Our movement is for Brahmins. At the same time, Prabhupada wanted this Vanashram Dharma instituted, but he wanted to create a head. And he understood that if you create a head that can think, then the head will recognize the need for arms and stomach and legs, and the head will go about finding those things. So this forgiveness is a very important quality. It's a very important quality in society. That we should overlook people's faults. We should see faults in ourselves and not faults in others. Narada Purana, 1st Canto, chapter 37, text 33 to 35 describes, Virodish api murkeshu niriksha vasti tangunan virodham nahi kurvanti sajjana santa vetasa. Persons who are good men, they have a calm mind. They see good qualities present even in offending fools, and they don't offend them in return. Bahuda badyamano pi yo narok shamayanvitaha tam uttamam naram prahur vishno priyataram sada. That person who is always tolerant, even if he's being harassed, he's the most excellent man, and he's forever the favorite of Lord Vishnu. And then this next part is in prose. Sujano yajnati vairam parahita bhudhir vinashakalipi chedipi chandanataru surabhayati mukham kutarayasya.
He says that even at the time of death, a good man thinks of the welfare of others and doesn't become inimical to his offender. Even when cut, the sandalwood tree renders the edge of the axe fragrant. So this is a quality of the Kanishtha Madhyam, is that he genuinely becomes forgiving. We'll speak more about this quality of forgiveness tomorrow when we speak about the Trinadipi Sanichina verse.
The second quality that a Kanishtha Madhyam has is avyakta kalatvam. He doesn't waste time. A very serious thing. And we've seen in devotees, when devotees become a little serious about things, they don't waste time. Prabhu, I'm sorry, I don't have time for this thing. Because we have service to render to our Guru and Krishna. Why do we not have time? The materialists, they also don't have time. Prabhu used to say, one article I think called No Time. No time, no time, I have no time to read. Why? Because they're very busy with their personal sense gratification. But a devotee, he also has no time. Why? Because he has so many services to render. He sees, my Guru has given me so many things to do. I don't have time for these other things. I don't have time for frivolous activities. And viraktir, he's detached. He's not attached. He doesn't feel himself to be a controller. He doesn't try to manipulate things and people. It's described that once there was a group of pilgrims crossing over the Jamuna River here in Vrindavan, and the boat started gaining water and it started sinking. So everybody in the boat, they were taking little cups and different things and they were pouring water out of the boat. There was one sadhu who was sitting in the back of the boat, and nobody was paying attention to him until someone noticed that he had his kamandalu and he was dipping it into the Jamuna and pouring the water into the boat. Everybody else is taking the water and pouring it out, and he's putting the water in the boat. I said, "Hey, Baba, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, I don't want to go against Krishna's desire." So even the Kanishtha Madhyam, he's like that. He sees, "Oh, what is Krishna's arrangement? Let me accept that thing. No problem." He's detached. He doesn't think that Krishna... one day came to him, and a voice came to him or something and said, "Look, I want you to go and join the Hare Krishna movement and solve all the problems of that society." He doesn't think that God sent him here to do that thing. But he thinks, anyway, Krishna, he's doing so many different things. Once someone asked our Guru Maharaj, how do we understand so many different things going on in the society of the devotees? And sometimes things are bad and sometimes seem good and they're up and down. And he laughed and he said, "It's just like a football game." He says, "Sometimes the ball is with one team and sometimes it's with the other team and sometimes it's up in the air. And Krishna, he's just sitting and watching and enjoying it." So we should act within our field of influence. And this is an important conception in an understanding about offering respect in society. If everyone does it, if we act within our field of influence, then everything is okay. But when we begin to try to act outside our field of influence, when the wife starts trying to tell the husband how to make money, or when the husband starts trying to tell the wife how to cook or clean the house, or when the brahmacharis try to start telling the temple president how to manage the temple, and people go outside of their particular field of influence, then so many disturbances come. Now this doesn't mean that we have to be mum. If we see some bad thing going on, we just read this statement from Thakur Bhaktivinoda. If we see some discrepancy going on, then we can take that person aside in a proper time, in a proper place, and with sweet words, we can say something to them that's appropriate. So the Kanishtha Madhyam is Viraktir. The Madhyam Madhyam, he's Nidhuta Kasai. He has no bodily concept. He's not thinking in terms of himself and the body. But the Kanishtha Madhyam, he still has this bodily concept. The Madhyam Madhyam, has three qualities. Manasunyata, he also has the previous qualities of the Kanishtha Madhyam, but he also has, aside from that, Manasunyata. He's free from false prestige.
He doesn't become impressed when people come and they start glorifying him and saying, oh, you're like, you're this, you're like that. And he thinks, what am I? I'm doing the service my Guru Maharaj gave me. That's all. I know I'm not a very important person. He doesn't have any false prestige. Huh? Asabhanda. He has very strong hope. Very special thing. Huh? He has very strong hope that I can get this prema. For the Kanishtha Madhyam, his hope is not that strong. Actually, in this material world, it's said that we should become hopeless. Because the materialists, the Kanishtas especially, they have, and to some extent the Kanishtha Madhyam, they have so many hopes. They've tried to enjoy sense gratification in this way and that way, and they've failed again and again and again. But still they have some hope. Just like the donkey. The donkey's working very hard all day long, carrying so much heavy loads and things. And what is he doing? Just so he can have a little sex with the she-donkey in the evening. But that poor donkey, he only has a few teeth left in his mouth because every time he goes for sex with that she-donkey, she's kicked him in the face every time. And although he's been kicked in the face every time, every day that thing happens, still he has some hope that this time will be different. No problem. He has some hope that this time will be different. So to come to Krishna consciousness, we have to become hopeless. We have to give up all hope. There's no hope left of our sense enjoyment. But even for the Kanishtha, even for the Uttam Kanishtha, still there's some hope there that they can try to enjoy in some different way. So the Madhyam, he's not disturbed by those things. He has hope, but his hope is hope for Krishna consciousness. We should analyze, do we have this kind of hope? We don't see that thing. We feel hopeless about Krishna consciousness, and we feel hopeful about Maya. That's our sad situation. So he's manasunyata, he's free of false prestige, he's asabanda, he has strong hope, and he's simutkanta, he has great eagerness. And that eagerness is spontaneous. You don't have to go and pour water on his head to get him out of bed in the morning to go to Mangal Arati. You don't have to go and bang a gong right next to his ear and play loud music or something. But he's spontaneous. He's very, very eager to engage in Krishna conscious activities. The Uttam has all the previous qualities that were described also. Uttam Madhyam. And what did we write up here? Uttam Madhyam. Anyway, we'll say something about that. The Uttam Madhyam, he has all these other previous six qualities, but he also has Nama Gana Sadaa Ruchi, and Asakti Stad Gunakine, and Priti Stad Vasate Stale. Nama Gana Sadaa Ruchi, he always has a taste for the holy name. Always a taste for the holy name is there, for the Uttam Madhyam. Not that some days he feels some taste, and other days, my God, what a drag. But I have to finish my rounds, my finger. Finished one round. Okay, another round done. It's a big labor for us, a big job. We're very, very unhappy with it. But the Uttam Madhyam, he always has a taste for Nam, Nam Ruchi. Asaktis Tad Gunakyane, he's very attached to hearing descriptions of the Lord's transcendental qualities. He has some Kata Ruchi. Pitis Tad Vasate Stale, and he has great affection for the places where the Lord resides. And Prabhupada, he describes in the translation for that those places mean Vrindavan, or they mean the temple where the Lord is worshipped. He has great affection for those places. He's not attracted to go to other places. So then there's the Uttam. There's three types of Uttam Adhikaris. In the U.S., we should say the Madhyam Uttam, or the Uttam Madhyam. Another quality he has is that he's always seeing Krishna's arrangement in everything. He's seeing Krishna something, and sometimes it's said that he has some lila spurti, but he's not fixed in that thing. Now, amongst the Uttams, there's three types. The Kanishtha Uttam, the Madhyam Uttam, and the Uttam Uttam. The Kanishtha Uttam, he's Murchitakasai, meaning that there's still some trace, some faint trace of vasana. He's not in the bodily conception of life like the Kanishtha Madhyam, who also has some kasaya.
But his kasaya is different. He's thinking that he's the body and wanting to act in that. The Uttam Vaishnava, Kanishtha Uttam, he has some little trace of that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes them. That such persons that they have their heart remains a trace, some basana, some impression, some sanskar of the material mode of goodness. And he gives an example, he says the Merchant of Kasai Uttam, or the Kanishta Uttam, the example given is Judd Bharat. He's a very, very elevated personality. But still there's some trace there, although that some basana, but that basana is in the mode of goodness. He says that due to their bhakti yoga, these traces of material contamination remain dormant or unconscious. As soon as there's some favorable opportunity, then Krishna, he causes their desire to be consumed and attracts them to his lotus feet. And another example, he says, of the Kanishya stage of the Uttam Bhagavats is Narad Muni in his previous life as a son of a maidservant. Next is the Nanduta Kashai. That's the Madhyam Uttam. The Nanduta Kashai, his kasai, his faults, or his attachment to worldly objects, are not quite destroyed yet. There's still some trace of that. They've thrown off all their material impurities, Vishwanath describes, but still they have a gross material body made out of five elements. And there's no actual trace of any basana, no material impressions, there's no sanskars in their heart. They're the intermediate Uttam Bhagavats. And he gives example, Vishwanath gives example of Shukadeva Goswami, because he still has a body like that. And in another place, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Raghavartma Chandrika, he gives example of such a personality. He says that there's still something left, but that something really is nothing. It just looks like it. And he gives a very interesting example. He says that if you're burning a fire, a log of wood, all of us, maybe we've gone to the forest or the mountains sometimes for retreat, and we have a campfire, and you're burning a big log of wood. After that log is completely burned, everything is completely, totally burned in it. The next morning you may come and you see the log is still there. The form of it is still there. If you touch it, you'll find it just falls into ashes. It's just the form. So similarly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes his personality, the Nanduta Kashai, the Madhyam Uttam, as being someone who still has a material body. But don't think, because he has a material body made out of five gross elements, that he's like you or I. He has no samskar, there's no basana left in his heart. And the highest one is the Bhagavat Lila Prapti. He's the Uttam Uttam. And that person, he's always seeing the pastimes of Krishna. They've attained a perfected spiritual body as an associate of the Lord. And Vishwanath gives the example of Devarshi Narada. Narada Muni, after he's had darshan of Krishna, and he's realized his position, his service to Krishna, and he's traveling throughout the spiritual material worlds, simply rendering service to Krishna. So, there's so many things on these topics. Nisha means that he's Nisha to his Gurudev. Nisha means that he's beyond Anishita Bhajana Kriya, that his bhajan is fixed, it's Nishta. And that he's between there and the level of a Sakti.
The Shakti is older than me.
Yes. He may have some beginning understanding about that thing. Some beginning thing like that. Sometimes that thing may happen. We could also speak something too in his regards about very involved subject matters about what is Bhav, what is Bhava Bhas. Sometimes some people may exhibit some of the symptoms that we're reading, we're describing here, of the higher Madhyams or even the Uttams. And Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Thakur Bhaktivinoda, they describe this thing as being Bhakti Abhas or Bhava Abhas. And this comes sometimes by being in association with an elevated devotee who may be feeling something very strong in their heart. In his association, we may also feel something. But Bhaktivinoda says generally that thing goes away after a short time. It's not dhrita, it's not a fixed thing. But it comes sometimes. Is that okay? I'm sorry? according to his position, the more elevated he is a uttamadyam, the more fixed they're going to be.
Or for the kanishta. So the uttam kanishta,
he's also very... There's different ways we can describe these things. We can describe the kanishta in a very general way, as just being a low person. And the madhyam being a middle person, uttam being a high person. That's one correct understanding. And then Jiva Goswami is giving us other more elaborate explanation in this regard. So the uttam kanishta is actually a very elevated person. We might consider the uttam kanishta to be like an uttam adhikari, by our understanding. And uttam kanishta, he's learned it in the shastra, he has some understanding of shastra, and he has some fixed position. So therefore he's an uttam kanishta. He's still kanishta because he hasn't come to the platform above. He's still kanishta because he still has attachment to his body. He's still kanishta because he hasn't seen Krishna. But he's an uttam kanishta because he has many good qualities also. He's an ishta. Maharaj? Excuse me? That's what it's described. He may be up to that level of vishakti. And bhava begins with the madhyam. With the madhyam. The madhyam adhikaris begin with bhava.
The classification of putting madhyam at bhava level is the prerogative of Jiva
Goswami. Some of the acharyas say... Yeah, I'm saying there's different ways we can see these things.
And madhyam saying nishtha, single-tutta.
Yeah. And we can adjust these things. We can see different considerations. One of the purposes why we're writing all these things, we're not trying to give a lecture about what is the three different types of Vaishnavas, but the purpose is so we can try to appreciate something about Vaishnavas, and we can also try to appreciate something about our own position. So we can't see who's on these platforms, but we should think for ourselves that I must be a kanishta kanishta. At least in my own case. Prabhuji?
So when it is called by Madhyamadhikari who has to differentiate, it is again Madhyam Kanishta.
The Madhyam Kanishta, yes.
He can differentiate. Yeah.
The Kanishta, he doesn't, he's not even thinking about that thing. But when someone becomes a Madhyam Kanishta, he's a little Madhyam, he starts to realize why I'm going to have to. Why is he a Madhyam Kanishta? He's a Madhyam Kanishta because he begins to differentiate with people in these different ways. He's still not so expert at it, and he's still doing it in the bodily conception of life. But he becomes a Madhyam Kanishta when he starts to differentiate like that. It's an important thing. Mataji? Good, good. Thank you. That's a good question. So, you heard okay? So she's asking... Yesterday we were speaking about this drishta and drishta, and how we should not consider ourselves the seer. But now today we're giving all these descriptions about different types of Vaishnavas. So how does this fit together? So we should respect Vaishnavas, and we have to respect according to Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam. But we can't see who that person is. We should look at ourselves. And we should look at others. These two considerations have to be there. When we talk about these considerations of understanding who is a Kanishta, who is a Madhyam, who is an Uttam, we also have to look at ourself. These things should apply to ourself, especially. But we should respect, we should see, one of the points about the Madhyam Uttam is in Udita Kashai, is that you can't tell that Madhyam Uttam, he still has a material body and he looks like he may have some vasana. He may have some attachments. Sometimes it's said that the Machita Kashai, he may still seem to have some material attachments. Just like Jed Bharat, he had an attachment to the deer. Vishwanath gives that example. And we might criticize him. We might say, oh, he's a nonsense. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he's an Uttama Adhikari. But he's the Kanishta Uttam. So we can't see. We should be very, very careful about that thing. We can't see who other people are. I mean, we should apply this thing to ourself. And we should act in such a way that people will see us. The sadhu will see us. If we can do this one thing, as we were describing yesterday, then our spiritual life will go very, very nicely. If we can give up the attitude that I'm the seer, that I'm the judge of who's a Vaishnava, who's not a Vaishnava. And we simply act in a way to please the Vaishnavas. And what is that thing which is the most pleasing to the Vaishnavas? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Krishna nam sudakoriya pan judao bhakati vinoda pran. Is it you satisfy the heart of Thakur Bhaktivinoda? How? Krishna nam sudakoriya pan. You drink this Krishna nam. Therefore, when we do Tulsi Puja, Tulsi is a devotee. We worship her. What do? After Tulsi Puja, we chant Hare Krishna. Why do we chant Hare Krishna? What is the necessity of chanting Hare Krishna and Tulsi Puja? Why don't we just keep singing Jai Tulsi Maharani, Jai Tulsi Maharani over and over again? We chant Hare Krishna because Tulsi becomes pleased by that thing. When we do Guru Puja, we chant the Panchatattva Mantra, we chant the Hare Krishna Mantra for the pleasure of Guru. Is it okay? So is there anything else? Raj, you want to add anything? Common shredder. He didn't write down what I said. These things come from some explanation of Bhakti Sandarbha. Mostly we've heard from Fakir Mohan Prabhu. Bhakti Sandarbha. There's one book we have in Bengali which describes it more elaborately, but Jaivadharma describes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes in his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about these three types of uttams.
Because Jalbaratos had defense from Maharaj
Bharat. Yeah, my understanding was it meant Bharat Maharaj. Did I say Bharat?
Because you said Jalbarat for the Kanishka, you were quoting Vishwanath Bharat Thakur and you gave the example of Jedbarat and
in any case, Jedbarat or Bharat Maharaj, there's a string between the two of them. They're both
the same person.
Yeah, the same person.
The same diva.
And their platform didn't seem to change a whole lot right away. From what I can understand, I can be corrected on that thing.
So sometimes they say Jedbarat, sometimes they'll say
Bharat Maharaj. Well, there's two. Jedbarat. Bharat Maharaj took birth again as Jedbarat.
It is the same person. From one life to the other.
If we study the Shastra and we chant the holy name, then Chetadarpana Marjana, the result of the holy name, is that the mirror of our heart will be cleansed and we can see something in that mirror. We'll be able to see ourselves and we'll be able to see others. But I would suggest that it's a very, very dangerous proposition to think that we're the seer. At the same time, what can we do? If the Majjhima Adhikari doesn't see, how can he distinguish? If he's distinguishing because he sees something. What does that mean? That means what comes to his heart. What comes to his heart through his bhajan, through his service to Guru, through his reading of Shastra. His heart, the little voice in the heart will say, hey, stay away from this guy. Associate with this person. And of course, it can be grosser than that too. He may avoid persons who are openly hostile or critical of the devotees. That's a very easy thing to see. But also he'll get some feelings, some impression. But at the same time, we were speaking more about this yesterday also, at the same time, how does he know? He may make some mistake. Sometimes a saintly person may act very angry. They may shout at you. Sometimes a saintly person, as we were giving some examples, they may smoke, they may do some different thing, and they may seem like a materialistic person because of that. Gadadhar Pandit couldn't understand, couldn't recognize Pundarvijaniti. So we have to consider ourselves in that sense also not the seer. But this is a little bit of a dynamic tension. We're not the seer, but at the same time, our heart is going to tell us something. And we have no choice from that. What our heart tells us, as we gave the example yesterday, when a boy falls in love with a girl and he feels this thing, he can't do anything different. He's going to have to go with that girl. He's going to have to marry her or whatever. When our heart goes to a Vaishnava, then we can't help ourselves. We want to take initiation from that person. We want to hear from that person. We want to take shelter of that person. So we have to be careful about the quality of our heart. Because in spite of our feelings, we're still not the seer. In spite of how much Shastra you've read, in spite of how much service you've done and how much chanting you've done, you can't really see. Gadadhar Pandit couldn't recognize Pundarvijaniti. Yashoda and Rohini couldn't recognize Putana. And they allowed Putana to come in. So we should always consider ourselves that we're not the seer, and we should always pray to Krishna. Because Krishna, he can make what's unreal look real and what's real look unreal. can make Maya look like not Maya, and not Maya look like Maya. Mm-hmm. So we have no choice. We have to join the Krishna consciousness movement. We have to really become Krishna conscious and not just put on a dress and do some external things, this or that, but we have to actually become Krishna conscious and depend upon Krishna. And then Krishna will dictate in the heart of different people. Many times we see that one symptom of a neophyte devotee is that there's a nice phrase in Sanskrit. What is it? That he sees the rest of the world like himself. A famous phrase probably you see used all the time. That he sees, I have this friend, I like this person. And how many times we have a discussion with somebody and say, you know, I really like such and such Swami. And the other person says, oh, he doesn't know any Shastra. He doesn't give good classes. He's like this or that. And then we have in our pecking order, just like in the chickens, they have a pecking order in their society. You know? We have a pecking order. And we have our group of friends. And if you say, I like this sadhu, or I like this person, then that person has to be cool. He has to be accepted by that society. Otherwise, they may criticize that person, then you will feel bad. And for that reason, neophyte devotees, they want to accept a guru who looks really good. You know, he should be Indian, he should be like over the age of 70, he should know at least 1,000 verses, speak a lot of Rasik Katha. And that's cool. Then nobody's going to criticize him, they'll give me lots of respect. Because their motivation is to get respect for themselves, not to offer respect to others. They're on a very gross platform like that.
Yes,
you
opened your heart.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing because you want to respect her. You don't want to listen to her. Right? We were saying we shouldn't listen to such things. We don't want to hear criticism of someone. But at the same time, she's your friend. And you have to listen to her. Especially ladies are very good at listening. That's a good quality that they have. They want other ladies to listen to them. That's how you show respect. So if you don't listen to her, you're not respecting her. There's a nice example of this in the life of Gadadhar Pandit that once, my memory is very bad today. What's his name? Who said that I don't accept Sridhar Swami?
Balabhacharya.
He once went to Gadadhar Pandit and said, he was trying to get everyone to listen to his commentary in the Bhagavatam. And Mahaprabhu didn't want to hear it. So Balabhacharya was going to this devotee, and devotees heard that Mahaprabhu didn't want to hear this commentary, so they wouldn't have anything to do with him. Finally he went to Gadadhar Pandit and he grabbed him. Hey, you got to listen to me. And Gadadhar Pandit couldn't get away. So then he started explaining all this thing to him, and Gadadhar Pandit, he had to listen. But he was only listening externally. He wasn't listening so much internally. So when we listen to something like that, in a situation like that, my suggestion would be, we all find ourselves sometimes in situations like that where someone wants to come and they really need to say something from their heart. They've been hurt by someone and they need to speak something about that. And you don't want to hear anything bad about that person. You can try telling them, look, this is not going to help you. You shouldn't speak ill of that person. If you do that, it's just going to be bad for you. But many times they don't want to hear that and they're not willing to hear that. So in such a case, you may feel that you may not be able to get away from them. You may have to listen to them. You may just get away and say, well, look, I'm really sorry, I got to go. And then in that way, try to instruct them it's not a good way for them to behave in a gentle way. If you can't physically say something to them, and then the other situation you may be in, that you can't get away from them and you're forced to listen. So in that case, you may listen with your ears, but not with your heart. You may have to listen to them and say, oh yes, he did that to you? Oh my gosh, and this and this. And that way you give them some respect. Respect is given to different people according to their consciousness. Just like Srila Prabhupada is a nice example in his life. And when he visited Africa, the devotees had rented a house in South Africa from some lady, a Karmi lady. And this Karmi lady was living right next to the devotees. And she was always very angry with the devotees and always complaining to them. She's an old lady. And why are you making so much noise? And this, what is this cooking you're doing? This terrible smell's coming and the chants and things. And she didn't like the kirtan. She got very upset when they were getting up in the morning and the devotees were stealing flowers from her garden. And she was always very angry and complaining to them. Then Srila Prabhupada came. And Prabhupada was there the first night. The next morning, he wanted to go for a morning walk. So he came out of the house, and the first thing was that that lady, the next door neighbor, was right there. And all the devotees said, "Oh no, what's going to happen now?" Now she's going to start criticizing Srila Prabhupada. It's a very bad thing. And Prabhupada saw her and said, "Oh, you're living right here? Oh, you have such nice flowers. Oh, well, how do you really see?" And he started talking about her flower garden. And then he started talking about his teeth and her teeth and the digestion and all completely mundane things. And that lady loved Srila Prabhupada. So he became so very, very appreciative because of it. And why? Because Prabhupada was giving her respect. He wasn't going and touching her feet. She would have thought that was very weird. I'm sure probably would have done that. It wasn't appropriate. But he was showing her respect in the way that she appreciated, by respecting the things that she felt were important. And I don't think realistically that Prabhupada thought that her teeth were very important or her garden or this or that. But he was doing that to make her feel good, to make her feel respected. And if we do that, then people feel a little peaceful. So this is a general principle. We should try to respect everyone, but that respect is offered in different ways. You will respect an advanced devotee by listening to them, by serving them, by surrendering to them. But if you go and do that with a materialistic person, that's not proper respect. You may wash the feet and drink the water of an advanced devotee, of a sannyasi or guru like that. But if you go and do that with the plumber who shows up at your house, or the carpenter or something like that, he's not going to appreciate that. He's going to think you're crazy. But you can respect him by asking him, "How are your kids? How's your wife? How's your health?" This and that. And you're respecting his life. We can respect the insects by giving them a little prasadam, by not stepping on them. We can respect the animals. We can respect the cows by scratching them, by giving them something to eat. That's the kind of respect they liked very much. If you go and offer obeisances to a dog, the dog really doesn't care very much. If you're offering obeisances like that, if he has to relieve himself, he might just do it on top of you, if you're offering obeisances like that. But the dog, you offer respect to him by giving him a chapati, by patting him on the head, something. So we offer respect according to different ways, according to different persons, different living entities' consciousness. Prabhuji, you were going to say something?
I was thinking...
Emphatic listening.
Because we had to do the seminar, it consists of listening without being judgmental. It's a whole technique, there's a whole course about it. And you just show to the other person that you are listening, but you never fall into the trap of passing judgment. So yeah. It's not easy.
This is also interesting.
It's not easy because, that person is venting out his anger or his frustration, and you have to be you are showing to the person that you are concerned, but you remain, the motto is to remain neutral all the time. But since you are eagerly and earnestly listening, that person is going to reveal, and that brings good to him. But what is not easy to do is not to
give solutions.
Yeah, because we tell, we should do that, we should do this, and again we fall into the trap of
This is especially true in relationships between men and women.
Yeah.
Because the nature of ladies is that they like someone to hear them. And when they have problems, they want someone to hear them. The nature of men is they want to solve the problems. And so the lady just wants to be heard. She just wants someone to be sympathetic and she wants to get this thing out of her heart. But the problem with men is they always want to try to solve the problem. And that way they're not really showing respect to her. And they feel, well, why don't you just listen to me? Why are you just trying to try to control everything all the time? And then he becomes bewildered because she's not offering. He wants the respect because he's in a controlling kind of mode like that. It's also a basic difference between men and women. So anything else, Marash?
One time you told me it's really valuable instruction how when people criticize you, especially here in the Dhamma, in any of the Dhamma, how they're actually your best friends because they're taking all your karma and the artists away from you. you know, make yourself right in the cheek and you turn the other cheek, but understanding that actually they're your best friend because they're taking like this your negative aspects from you. Right? So the other thing is Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, you call a spade, and when somebody actually exhibited how do you know? Is it called somebody a spade when you point something out negative?
Depends on our soul. Did everyone hear him okay? First of all, he was saying that a very nice point Mars is making, and it leads into our class tomorrow about how critics are really our best friend, and how people who, when they criticize us, they take our karma and things away. And then he's mentioning how Srila Prabhupada said that although we shouldn't find fault with others, we should still call a spade a spade. So how do we reconcile? It seems like a contradiction. We shouldn't criticize others, but still we should also call a spade a spade. We should call a spade, but it depends on our social position. It's not appropriate for a five-year-old child to go and start correcting his parents and chastise them or something. It's not appropriate for a grihastha devotee to go and start chastising a sannyasi or a senior devotee like that. If we see them doing something wrong, even a five-year-old child, Krishna showed this, when he saw that his father was getting all these things together and they were organizing some big program, Krishna went and said, "Father, what's going on? Can you please tell me?" He said, "Oh, we're getting ready to do some Indra Puja." So then Krishna, he said, "Well, if it's not too confidential, could you please tell me what is the reason behind this and why you're doing it?" Huh? So he had some right to ask that question. He's just a little boy. But he's teaching us also, a little boy can do that if he asks in the proper way, in a sweet way, in an appropriate way, with appropriate respect. We can inquire from a superior person. And it's not appropriate at all to do that in public. We may not understand why that senior person has done something. And if we question them in public, then what happens is we may hurt the faith of some other devotees. It'll be very detrimental for ourselves. Prabhupada said we should call a spade, but we know that when one of Prabhupada's sannyasi devotees in Australia fell down from his vows as sannyas, and there's another devotee who went and told everybody about it, Prabhupada was very, very upset with that devotee. And we can say, well, he just called a spade, he was just telling the truth, but Prabhupada was very unhappy about it. So from that also we can understand that we should do things appropriate for society. It's not appropriate.